Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Amendment by Annie DeFranco, a song about the 19th Amendment, as we bring in our next guest, Zoe Nicholson. Zoe, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I wish it was a sunny day. We're going to make it sunny for everyone.
Just by the topic, I think. You are an expert on Alice Paul and her life. And for our listeners that are tuning in, many at home on your radio.com because they're under house arrest in the current coronavirus. Can you tell us a little bit, who was Alice Paul and why should we care?
Well, I'm going to tell you one of the most pivotal moments that will illustrate the question, the answer, and amaze people. In July of 1909, Mrs. Pankhurst was teaching her suffragettes all about the game plan to get the vote for women in England. And the meeting was held in Royal Albert Hall in summer of 1909. And Mrs. Pankhurst decided at that moment to begin using violence. She was recommending that they set buildings on fire and break windows and create mayhem, that they'd tried to be nice too long and was ready to go for it. And interestingly, there were two people in that group that got up, and when they left, they never went back. And one is Mohandas Gandhi, as you know, the master of nonviolence, who went on to work on the Free India campaign. And the other was Alice Paul. And Alice Paul did not agree with using violence. She got up and walked out of that meeting. When she came back to America in January of 1910, she began using nonviolent direct action here in the United States. 10 years before Gandhi, she fasted longer than Gandhi. She was force-fed more times than you can even count. Gandhi was not. But she was the first person in history to ever march on Pennsylvania Avenue to the White House for a political reason. And so what we have is we actually have a human being that was the original practitioner of nonviolent direct action. She's an American, and she's a woman, well before Mahatma Gandhi began his campaigns.
She was raised as a Quaker, right? And is it partially because of her Quaker religion? Because Quakers have always thought women were equal. That was never an issue for Quakers.
You are 100% correct. I'm so pleased you know that. Not only were the Friends, Society of Friends, the Quakers, believed in equality, but they also had something almost none of us saw as girls. I'm 71, and I certainly didn't see much of it. And being raised Catholic, I saw none of it, was that women were preachers. Mm-hmm. Women were standing in the pulpit and speaking of the gospel and the teachings of their church. So they had role models as young girls. Yes, she was a Quaker. She was a descendant of William Penn. She was born in New Jersey, and it absolutely figured heavily into her life.
At the time, I think the president of the United States was Woodrow Wilson. Am I right? Is that who the president was?
Yes, I must tell you, you're hitting probably the highest point. And Mr. Wilson was elected in 1912. and he was going to be installed on March 4th. Presidents were inaugurated in the month of March. And so Ms. Paul decided to disrupt the inauguration.
No.
And she did something I thought was masterful. She marched everybody up Pennsylvania Avenue, 8,000 people and 8,000 women, to let Mr. Wilson know that he was not going to get away with ignoring giving every American the vote. Mm. And one of my favorite visions, imagine this, Mr. Wilson arrives at Union Station in Washington, D.C. at 3 o'clock, the day before he's supposed to be inaugurated. There is a man to meet him, and that's it. There's nobody else there. He can't believe it. Why aren't there buntings? Why aren't there people? Isn't there a band? And he says to this man, "Where is everybody?" And this man tells the president-elect that, they're all marching up to the White House right now to protest and to demonstrate for the vote. So, you know, the parallels with Wilson and our current president are staggering. And even the New York Times recently wrote about it, that Mr. Wilson in 1918 lies to the country about a flu, and that flu kills 6,000 Americans.
That was the Spanish flu, correct?
He called it the Spanish flu as part of his racism. Mm. It had nothing to do with people of Spanish descent.
Kind of like the Chinese flu of today, what they're calling it,
flu. And the terrible problem that we're having with people being afraid now of Chinese restaurants and Chinese retailers. And yes, the parallels are staggering.
You know, I don't think people realize that the suffragists, when they were fighting for the right to vote, were routinely treated with ridicule, violence. Men physically overpowering them, taking them down, subjecting them to physical violence. I mean, it was not, you know, like you see in the Mary Poppins story with votes for women and cute little, I mean, that's part of the story. But the other part of the story is that there were very aggressive men who were physically violent in their response to the suffragists being out and doing these protests.
I'm not sure a lot of people understand that. I'm happy you brought it up. I want to say that one of the real issues around suffrage, around women being able to vote, that threatened men deeply, was because there was concern that if women got the vote, they would vote in favor of prohibition. And the Democrats, all these gentlemen from Kentucky, right, and a little wild turkey whiskey and so forth, there was great, great concern. So when Ms. Paul's march turned the corner with Inez Milholland on her white horse at the start, there were thousands and thousands of Southern Democrat men. Women were not in public. Ladies were not supposed to be in public. Men were, by and large, wildly inebriated. And they turned the corner and completely crushed the parade. There were over 200 ambulance calls, 175 injuries. Mm. The police refused to protect the women. And to demonstrate to your audience how...
Zoe, hold that thought. We got to go to break. But coming up next, gang, more about this incredible history as we celebrate Women's History Month. We're talking to Zoe Nicholson here on Channel Q. The lovely Chris Williamson singing Sister. Welcome back, Zoe Nicholson. We're talking about everyone's favorite sister, Alice
Paul.
I'm
so glad I got back. I need to finish that story.
Yes, you do.
We're all in suspense right now.
We've been sitting on pins and needles.
I just wanted to mention that the abuse was so bad at that parade and ongoing throughout the entire suffrage campaign that on March 5th, the day after the inauguration, Congress opened up an inquiry into the refusal of the police of Washington, D.C. to take care of the women and the actual head of the police department ended up being fired. So it was a very big deal, many, many injuries.
I mean, the fight for the 19th Amendment went on for 80 years, 100 years. I don't even know how long did it take for the 19th Amendment to pass.
Well, I would say that the first time enfranchisement was mentioned was in 1848 in Seneca Falls.
Wow. Yeah.
So I would say 72 years for white women to get the vote.
That is, and a good point.
White women
getting the right to vote in the 1920s.
Yes, well, all women got to vote through the 19th Amendment, but those who were able to practice it immediately were white.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took 1965 for African American women to be able to vote.
Wow.
And Tennessee, I think, because the way the constitutional amendments work, you know, the Congress has got to pass them, the president has to sign them, and then three-fourths of the states have to ratify. And I think Tennessee put the 19th Amendment over, finally.
And you're right, it was a woman named Mrs. Byrne who wrote her son Harry, who served in the House there, and said, don't forget, be a good boy and vote for women. And it's very famously photographed. You can Google the letter. It's pretty amazing. And Harry did, and it was the deciding vote, making Tennessee number 36.
Yeah, isn't
awesome.
That amazing? And it was by one vote, because his mom said, don't you forget, son.
Wait, which states didn't vote to ratify? Which states said no?
The other 14, I don't know how many states there were in 1920. That's a good question.
40, I think there were 40, oh my God, 46, I don't know. 48,
like
I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. What about the current Equal Rights Amendment, Zoe? What's the prognosis?
Well, I can't wait to tell you. I'm so glad you brought it up. I just went to Virginia. I was actually there. You know, I fasted for the Equal Rights Amendment on water for 37 days in the Illinois Rotunda in 1982. And there were seven of us who sat on folding chairs in that rotunda fasting on water. Many days I spent face to face with Phyllis Schlafly, and some days I was privileged to have Dick Gregory sit next to me.
Oh.
But I've been really involved in the Equal Rights Amendment written by Alice Paul in 1923, the same woman we were just speaking of. And it had the exact process you just mentioned, John. Yes, the Congress agrees to it. It goes out. It is signed by the president. It goes out to the states. It required 38 states. And the difference is the reason why the 38th state being Virginia, which just happened January 21st, 2020, that it didn't matter as of yet, is because there was a deadline attached. And I mention that so your listeners understand that of the 27 amendments that passed, none of them had deadlines. Only one proposed amendment had a deadline, and that was, in fact, the one that would affect women.
Now, why was that done? That must have been done back in the 70s. Why did they put a deadline?
It was 1971, the congressional hearings. It was signed in 72. It went out to the states. It got 7 years. And then we all marched 7 years later to extend the deadline. The boys gave us 10 more years to get the job done. And so, actually, in the last state to have voted for it was Indiana in 1977. Mm-hmm. And then, one by one, Nevada, Illinois, and Virginia picked up. So now we have the required 38, as you said, a supermajority. You're right about that. And they sent their documentation to the archives, the National Archives, and the archivist has stopped from accepting them. Huh. And he has refused to certify them. And all three state's attorneys, again, Nevada, Illinois, Virginia, are now suing the archivist that to declare the deadline unconstitutional, and then the archivist would have to accept that there are 38 states. And at that point, that would be it. Then equality of rights under the law would not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex. It would be a great day for America.
That would be, but
would
I wonder what this Supreme Court would do with that argument.
The Supreme Court has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, well, that's a good... Well, they're suing in court, though. They're suing in federal court.
Well, they're going to go through, but I think that once they see the 27 amendments didn't have a deadline, and yeah. this one, that the deadline be declared unconstitutional. I want to just tell you, for people who really follow the detail of the law, the deadline was not part of the three sections of the ERA. It was an add-on.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I just told you the 24 words of the amendment.
Yeah.
I just said them out loud. So there's nothing in there about a deadline.
Hmm. Well, of course, the way I'm thinking, if that fails, you know, if we have another blue wave in 2020 and we Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, gets it through without a deadline, and we retake the Senate and the Senate gets it through and a new president signs it, then how quickly can we get to three-fourths? That's
well,
a good question.
Well, I would not hold my breath sending that out to the states. I would rather take the 38 to sign, because a handful of states have already asked to rescind. So I also want to say danger, danger, Will Robinson, that we don't want to open up the idea of new amendments to the states, because I do think women's rights to choose to manage their own family planning and their pregnancies would be threatened deeply by that. So I'm going with the 38. The amendment that actually became the 27th Amendment is the Madison Amendment, and that took 203 years to pass. And by the way, its content is about salary raises for Congress. So I think there's tremendous evidence that a deadline is unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Well, I hope your argument is sound and right and prevails, because I don't want to start. I don't want to start over either. It's too crazy making, much too crazy.
Well, the House just passed House Resolution 79. Just passed about 3 weeks ago, declaring it unconstitutional.
Hmm. Okay.
Awesome.
And does that have to go to the Senate for concurrence? Apparently not.
Well, it will, but we're waiting for next January.
Yes, yeah. Thinking we may have a new Senate majority later.
Yes, when we have Amy McGrath in the Senate from Kentucky. Amen to that.
Come on.
She seems pretty bright. I've seen her commercials on MSNBC. I got to remember to send her a check. Yes.
Yeah, what's her website? Do we know? Amy McGrath.
I'm going to guess amymcgrath.com, right?
Something like that. Just Google Amy McGrath, everybody, and give her money, because we want Mitch McConnell out.
Yeah. Well, you can find her on Twitter. I posted about her on Twitter today. My handle on all platforms is Online with Zoe. It's my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. So you can find Alice Paul at missalicepaul.com is my website. I'm very proud of it. It's the deepest bibliography on Alice Paul that I know of.
Awesome.
Zoe, it has been a pleasure having you here. We're at the bottom of the hour, but I want to thank you for joining us and giving us this teachable moment about Alice Paul. Thank you so much.
Thank you, gentlemen, and happy Constitution. Yay, lucky us.
Yay, lucky us. Coming up next, gang, we'll be talking to Alex Mohajer, if I said that correctly.
Mohajer,
yes. Pardon me, about Hillary's for America, Bros for America.
Yes.